This is the Indie Dads Podcast. I'm Malcolm.
And I'm Brian.
And we're a couple of dads sharing our journey about starting out and bootstrapping our indie businesses while still prioritizing our young families. We believe that you can bootstrap a successful SaaS, freelance, or indie business while still enjoying the family life.
Join us as we share our learnings from building our businesses from scratch. Right. Welcome. It's episode 4. How you doing?
I'm doing rather well, Brian. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I was thinking last night that I cannot believe it's only been 2 weeks. There's so much that's gone on from my side. I mean, exciting stuff and less exciting stuff, but man.
It's crazy how time flies, eh? It's insane.
Yeah, I think I said this the last 3 episodes, but still feels that way. So what fun stuff have you done with your family lately?
Yeah, so you know, it's we're just getting out of winter here in Cape Town, so we haven't been able to do very much. So unfortunately, my answer is rather boring. But the new season of Fortnite has just come out, so that's pretty much what I've been doing with the boys and well, with Annabelle as well. So we've been getting into that. We're quite enjoying the new variety and changes they've made there. But yeah, for sure, the weather's getting better. So we're going to be out. We've got beautiful mountains here in Cape Town and we love to go and hike. So we're going to be doing that pretty soon.
Nice. Yeah, I'm similar. I mean, my son and I, he's now 15, loves to play Fortnite. It's been a little while, so maybe we need to get back into the new season, but that's been a family or a favorite pastime of mine. My daughters, though, are super into Minecraft. And, you know, Minecraft is like digital Lego. So, yeah, I love playing that with them. We just get on at night and build crazy stuff that doesn't really matter, and they think it's hilarious. So, that's what we've been doing a lot of, too, is just playing video games. We're kind of at the opposite end of the seasons from you. Our summer is hopefully wrapping up and starting to go into where it's actually nice enough to go outside here in Arizona, at least.
Oh, nice.
So excited. And we're actually getting ready to go on a cruise.
Oh,
this,
wow.
This Friday, actually it leaves Saturday, which is a whole thing. We had originally planned this cruise before the whole COVID thing. This was our once in a lifetime. We'll never be able to do this again. Cruise with the whole family, you know, the ages that they're at. And of course the expense is not cheap, but we saved up and we're going to do that. And then it got canceled. And oh, so we thought, okay, well, you know, back then everybody just knew COVID would be over in a month or so. So we rescheduled it to December of that year. And of course that didn't happen. So we just kept bumping it. We're finally to the point where they're allowing people to go on cruises if everyone is vaccinated. So 100% of the people have to be vaccinated, except under 12, they need to be tested. So they basically test you at the port. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting. We'll be going to the Caribbean area for a couple of days and they won't let you off at any ports. It's just it's a Disney cruise, which I highly recommend if anyone's debating what to do.
Nice.
Disney does it right. It's awesome. But you can't go to any ports. So the only place you can go to is this island that Disney owns. And we just go there for 2 days, play on the beach, come back. So it's still a cruise. We're getting it out of our system, but it's not what we originally planned. But that's what we're getting ready for. And that's what we're excited about this coming 2 weeks.
Well, I would imagine Disney being Disney, there's plenty to do on the boat, right? They've probably got everything you can think of in terms of entertainment on those boats. So that sounds amazing. So we look forward to next episode where we get to listen to what exactly you get up to there.
Well, and I won't have much done. I guess the reason I bring that up as well is between now and then, I'm not going to have a whole lot to share. It's going to be the Malcolm show next week or next time because I'll have a little bit to share about how that went. But as far as building my company or a SaaS or anything like that goes, making progress, I hope to not do much if I can stop myself. To me, it's fun to work on stuff, but it's family time, so I'm gonna be.
There's an easy way to do that, Brian. Just leave your laptop at home.
I can't. I probably should, but I don't know if I will. So
you can do it.
So how have your last 2 weeks been? What have you been up to?
So what I mentioned what I was going to do is get in a little bit involved in communities and try and get some feedback. So there was a little bit of that. I can speak into that just now as well. So on the app on remote time, pretty much constantly there's always a bug to fix, right? So as Murphy would have it, I got off our call and started working after recording the last episode and immediately found a bug after thinking I'm going to be spending a good amount of time doing other things. So I've been spending a bit of time just fixing that up, getting ready for another bug fix release to the App Store. While on the development topic, I've been thinking about adding some additional functionality to remote time, because at the moment it's really simple. You know, you basically just add your tasks and you clock in, you clock out, and you're able to generate invoices. That's just really, there's nothing really differentiating about those features.
Let me ask you a quick question about that. What is your differentiator, and what will it take for you to get to that point where it is? We kind of talked about this a little bit last time, but what will it take to get to the point where it is differentiated enough to where you can really double down on the marketing? And I know we all love builders and creators out there. We by default go back to coding and building, but I understand that you do need to differentiate because you're in a market where these products are mature and you can't just show up with basic features and expect anyone to use it. But where are you at in that journey?
I think that's an interesting distinction to Matt, and that's a little bit of part of my feedback. You should never use differentiation as an excuse not to tell people. So that's maybe jumping ahead in terms of what I was going to say, but I came to a realization, like it hit me really hard over the last 2 weeks, of that excuse of building something and having something to show before you start talking to people. Just, man, I'm so wrong on that. It's like, I'm just, you know, part of being in the Reddit communities and on IndieHackers and on Hacker News, and I think most of my posts were spectacular failures in terms of, like, you know, being in the place where you're allowed to say, hey, this is what I'm doing, how about some, you know, some feedback. You know, there's no commitment to buy anything because, you know, the app is free and all the rest, but the response was almost like crickets. So I think, you know, and it just made me realize that I should have been investing time in these communities way, way sooner, like even before I started coding. And it needn't have been a lot of time. It just needed to be a constant to get a feel of what's going on in those communities. And, you know, there's a whole like culture around how to post and all these things. So definitely lesson learned in terms of how important it is to speak to people. And it's not necessarily, and I think the whole thought process in the beginning was to try and get feedback on my product. And if I don't have a product, then why try and connect with people? And that was just such a wrong way of thinking. I think, to be, in retrospect, I should have been purposeful in just connecting with the community and answering questions and asking questions and, you know, just being generally inquisitive. And that would have helped tremendously, I think.
When like you said, it's hard to get people's attention, even if they want to be helpful, when you don't have something that gets them excited yet. So yes. What have you been doing to find those people in the first place?
Well, I think it's basically go and hang out where your community hangs out. So there's a number of subreddits where freelancers hang out. And I guess orthogonal to freelancers is people like us who have side projects who are really interested in businesses, because a lot of the time you're jumping into running your own business from running a freelance agency or doing freelancing to free up time. So there's a lot of similarity and crossover between freelancers and people who want to build their projects. So I'm been kind of dipping into both of those communities. I'm not such an experienced freelancer, so I'm more of a lurker there and asking questions and just giving feedback where I can there. I think building your products and like choosing technologies and things, I have a little bit more feedback to give there. So just being going to those, and it's a slow process. You find one or two of the popular subreddits, and then it's funny how that works, because it's just a community, and you answer a question on a forum and somebody instant message or private messages you, and you have a conversation with people, and you're just naturally making these connections as you would in real life, just by going to a party where you don't know anyone and you strike up a conversation and say, oh, well, you sound really interesting, give me your contact details. So I think it's just that whole process, right, that I needed to be doing way, way sooner.
And I've always underestimated, always, like every time, how much time that takes. And it should take. Sure. Like if you're going to be, to use Arvid Kahl's term from The Embedded Entrepreneur, embedded in a community, like that takes time. And you can't just build obviously we know you can't just build it, show up and say, here it is, please try it. I mean, you've got to gain their trust. And so since that takes time, the thing I always have to remind myself of is like, I need to be in there from day zero, not even day one, like just to start building trust, and not for the end result of trying to sell to them, but just to be in the community, like legitimately in the community instead of just being there as a marketing channel. And that just takes so much time and effort. Do you mind me asking, going back on last week's topic a little bit, how do you kind of budget that time, or do you do it explicitly, or do you just kind of roll with it? Like, how do you set that time aside?
Yeah, it has to be explicitly set. I mean, because I have such little time, I have to demarcate with like, if I have 10 hours, I purposefully say I'm going to spend 3 of those doing marketing and 5 of them building new features, and you know, and then I try segment it up, and I don't. You know, hold myself strictly to it, but at least it's some sort of purposeful planning in doing that. The thing about online communities, it's a lot easier to flow in and flow out, so it doesn't necessarily have to happen in the evenings for me, which is a good thing. It just means I'm doing less of browsing general technology news sites and being more purposeful about going to Reddit and chatting and seeing what questions are being asked there. So are you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say one thing that I've done that is along those lines is I have, you know, my bookmarks in my browser, and I have a folder that's just called communities. They're communities that I want to be involved in or participate in. You know, I've got 7 or 8 bookmarks in there, and I just right click on that folder and I say open all once or twice a day. And I just make sure that I go in there and I either reply. I mean, most of the time it's replying. I'd say 90% of the time it's just replying, liking, being involved. Maybe 10% of the time I'm posting an original post. But like you're saying, just being deliberate about that and going in once or twice a day. Otherwise, it's been a week before you've posted or been in there, and then a month, and then 3 months. You know, it's so easy to lose track because you're so excited about the thing you're building. So just wanted to emphasize what you were saying.
Yeah. So the other thing that I did was, and this was of no benefit to me really, well, no direct benefit, was a while ago I posted a GitHub page with Xamarin Indie Apps, and the secondary thing to that would, I just say I had a good couple submissions, 5 or 6 of them. So I wanted to give some airtime to those developers and started a Twitter thread on just what those apps were and who's building them, just to get some more exposure for them on, you know, on the Xamarin Twitter sphere. The other thing that I realized while I was doing on the marketing segment of my activities was I was listening to a podcast from Software Social. I think it's probably the 2nd or 3rd episode. I can't remember. But they were talking about SEO. And I think that's something that I drastically underestimated. You know, I think the thinking was, I'm doing a mobile app. You know, what do I need? I need a landing page for some download links. That's pretty much all I need. And that thinking was also very wrong, because I just discovered, I think, in terms of, it's just so hard when you release a mobile app, you get an initial bump in figures because it's new and there's algorithms in the app stores that list your app for you and you get exposure there. But once you're past that first couple of weeks and you haven't gained a lot of users or in-app purchases, I guess the app stores are motivated by how much money you're making them, your app pretty much gets buried. So it's very difficult to get discoverability after that. And your website is super important to funnel your users to your app. And that's something that I haven't, like, the one piece of feedback that I did get was somebody went to the website that has the download links to the app stores and said, man, your website is not very good. And it's like, number one, thank you for your honest feedback, because I've had a couple comments that said, oh, I love your website. And my thinking was, I actually don't like it very much. It's just something I threw together from a theme on ThemeForest, just so that I could have a landing page. And I actually only did it so that I could have a privacy policy and terms and conditions link, which the app stores require you to have. But now I'm realizing that it's actually a super important piece of the marketing puzzle in terms of SEO and getting people who are searching for freelancer software or whatever into the funnel for actually downloading your mobile app, because that's downloading an app is a high cost thing. And that's way further down the funnel than somebody is just investigating solutions and things like that. So I think that's something that's been drastically bumped up. My priority is getting a decent landing page that does well with SEO, however that works. I don't have a clue. I'm going to have to read up on it and see how that works. And from the development side as well, in terms of features, I knew there was some unique ways I wanted to slice the landing page of the mobile app and you know, show different clients that you're working for and like how much hours you're working for each client and have that easily visible. But something I'm very glad I've done is gotten into contact with some designer friends. And I would make an initial version and I'd send him a screenshot and say, hey, you know, what do you think of this? And they're always very polite and say, yes, that looks okay. It looks nice. But what do you think of this? And we jump onto Figma, and Figma is fantastic for this, you know, because you can see the other person's mouse. And in 20 minutes flat, he had taken my design and completely redone it. And it looked 10 times better than anything I could have come up with. And I was like, man, this is so cool. I haven't had this much energy for building remote time in a long time, because you know, when you see the end result and the design, and it just syncs with the ideas that I've had of how I want to build it. And you know, you have this fuzzy picture, which when somebody makes it clear for you, then that's great. So that's given me a lot of energy, and I've been spending a fair amount of my time. It's not a big redesign, but it drastically changes the landing page and the user interface in a way that kind of like makes all my screenshots and the efforts of doing a marketing video, which I mentioned an episode or two ago that I was going to do, it kind of puts that on hold a little bit, because I'm changing it so drastically. It doesn't make sense to do that now. So what's nice is I'm working on features that are giving me a lot of energy, and that I'm fairly certain will communicate a lot more of a unique value proposition for when I do the marketing and videos. And I think it will give me a lot more confidence in actually posting something on Product Hunt, which is something I'm hoping to build up to when some of those things have been built.
So what is that unique value prop that you're like, how would you describe your app? Like what, why would somebody want to use it? I'm grilling you a little bit here, so I hope you don't mind, but and I hope you do the same to me, but why would somebody want to use your app as opposed to the other, you know, 20 that are in the app store? What are you, I guess circling back to my original question, what are you pushing toward in terms of features to where you get to the point where you're, where it's good enough to double down on the marketing and getting people, getting eyeballs in front of it? And like, what is that milestone? And when do you foresee that being? Is that a month from now? Is that 2 weeks from now? Is that 6 months from now? What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, so to be really simple about it, if I can get to the point where I'm not using Excel anymore, then I know I'm there, right? I've already gotten rid of the invoicing software that I was using, so at least I can punch in and out, and I can register my tasks, and I can generate an invoice, and that's the basics any freelancer needs. But I'm a little bit of an analytics guy, so I like to know, like, for example, if I'm working 160 hours for a client in a month, you know, usually they're quite flexible. They don't require that you work 8 hours every day. So maybe it's 7 hours today and maybe it's 9 hours tomorrow, so long as it averages out over the billing period. And for me, what I'm still doing in Excel is keeping track of each client and the hours that I've logged for them. But then there's that flexibility time in terms of I'm up 2 hours for the billing period, or I'm down 3 hours, so I now got to work a little bit extra next week just to make sure that everything. And that goes for my side projects as well. If I target 30 hours for remote time in a month, I like to know if I'm hitting that target or not. So the moment that I can do that in a really simple way, and I can replace Excel, then I know, like, then I will love using my own app, and I'll have confidence in communicating that to other people. And that's just really the first brick in the house. I've got a much longer term vision in terms of being a more full solution for freelancers to get discovered and all these things. But that's the, in my mind, the unique value proposition MVP. And in terms of timelines, it's good to have a goal. So probably before the end of the year, and I can say that it sounds long, but I've been keeping track of all my timesheets of indie hacking for the last probably 4 or 5 years. And without fail, by November, December, I start to run out of steam and I'm spending more time with family because of holidays and things like that. So really, this time of year is like, I think October is probably my last productive month, and then November it starts winding down, and December is very, very quiet. So I know I've got a limited amount of time, and I know I'm kind of splitting that time, not just with dev work, you know, being involved in communities and stuff as well. So if I have that ready to roll by the end of the year, and I'm hoping that I can get another landing page in by then as well. That's kind of a stretch goal. Then I'd be happy with that. Start off 2022 with, you know, with gusto and trying to get users and, you know, shift focus more to customer acquisition rather than building product.
Okay. So let me ask two follow-up questions there. What you're saying makes sense in terms of how you use it and how you would like to replace Excel with ways that you use it. My first question is, and you can answer this in either one first, but my first question is, have you talked to others and found others that have a similar way of working, so that in addition to building it for yourself, you know that you're building it for more than just one? And then the second question is, maybe this could answer the first, what's your elevator pitch? What is your one sentence, one line elevator pitch? I'm curious what that is, if you have one, and if not, it's okay to wing it a little bit. Or tell me, you'll come up with one later.
Make one up on the spot.
That kind of helps you distill, I think, what your differentiator is, or what it is to people that it'll help with marketing. It'll help with SEO. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit contrarian here and say that I think people struggle with this unnecessarily, especially in a crowded space. So there is no product like the one that you build or I build. All of them have unique user interfaces and user experiences. The core fundamental of remote time is simplicity, of being able to do time tracking, tasks, and invoicing all in one app. So you don't have to use all these different disjointed things. That's the core of it. There's many other pieces of software that'll do that for you. So I wouldn't be so bold as to say that's like only remote time does that and no one else does it. It does it in a way that is different to other apps. And I'm hoping that'll sound with, identify with other people like me.
Just real quick, I think it's okay if what your app does is the same as other apps out there. In other words, I don't think you need a totally unique elevator pitch. But I guess my question boils down to, what is your one-liner? What is the thing that you're going to use, the phrase, the hook, whatever you want to call it, that you're going to use to explain to people in one line? And this will help with SEO. Like I said, this will help with everything, App Store listings and all that. What is the one-liner you're going to use? It sounds to me like it's something along the lines of simple, I'm going to butcher this, but find a better way to put this, I'm sure you will. It's like simple time tracking so that you know where you stand either week to week or month to month with your clients. Does that make sense? I mean, that's kind of why I'm asking that, because without that, I think you're going to have a hard time differentiating. Even if your app does the same thing as other apps, and that's okay, you still have to, like, not everybody's going to see every app. They might see only your app and not this other one that's identical. So you still need that hook. And what would you say that is?
Sure. I mean, and you've nailed it on the head there, is knowing where you're at with your clients in a really simple way with all three of those aspects of that we're talking about. But I guess I'm a little hesitant as well in terms of bedding that down, because to be honest, I just haven't talked to enough people for them to tell me that. I don't want to decide it up front and say, this is now stuck in concrete. This is what I'd like it to be. But I haven't gotten enough feedback from other customers and one-to-one conversations, which is something I need to prioritize in terms of for them to tell me this is what they get out of it. This is why they use the app over something else. And I'll feel a lot more confident, I think, in saying this is what I'm offering when I know other people have already told me this is why I prefer it. And at the moment, I'm a little bit in my own echo chamber, which is like, I guess, the struggle of trying to get out of, right?
Well, I think that's fair. And I love how you put it. Let them tell you. You don't tell them. Like, ultimately, you'll tell them based on what people have told you, but it's almost the same problem as build it and they will come. The thing that you build may or may not be the thing that people need. And so the way that you word it may or may not be what resonates with other people. So I totally get what you're saying, talking to more people, finding out what their problems are, letting them tell you how it solves their problem, and then echo that back. So I'll be interested in hearing what that evolves into. And it can change. Like, you know, you don't have to, you don't have to make it perfect right now, but I'm really curious what that ends up being over time.
Me too, because you don't know, right? It's like uncovering dinosaur bones. You know more or less what the structure is, but until you wipe away the sand, you don't know what the product's going to evolve into. So I know I'm in a space that I'm passionate about, and we'll see how that goes. I have some very core ideas in terms of, I think what's important to me is a lot of these time tracking applications are very invasive in terms of for the client that you're serving. You know, they want to know like how many hours you spent on a particular task, or they've got screen capturing built in so that they make sure that you're always working. And I'm kind of like, my whole philosophy is the antithesis of that. So, you know, further down the road is building in the one-liner is how to have healthy conversations with your clients. Whatever software and whatever analytics is needed for you to have healthy and productive conversations and feedback with your clients that you are serving, that's what I want to build. And I don't know exactly what that looks like yet. I have some ideas, which I'm eventually going to get to. But now that the core feature is there and kind of like the foundation of the house is laid, what's more important now is confirming that with users and man, that's hard. You know, it's for anyone thinks it just and it speaks a little bit into our experiment with Indie Dads. The first post that I made on Reddit, I think the community was about 20,000 strong, with maybe 30 or 40 online users at the same time. And we got such a good response there. We had a good download conversion rate, and we had about 50 comments, and it was just so good. And I was over the moon. I was like, okay, I know of this other community. They're about 100,000 strong, and there's about 300 online at the same time. And it was like, didn't even hit the ground running. It's like the post was there, and I'm not even sure we got a single comment from there. So you don't know. It's difficult to gauge these things in terms of where you're going to find your niche and your community of people. And I haven't found that for remote time yet.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here grilling you, but I have the same problem. It's so hard to find people that aren't just passively curious. And I think that's, you know, what we saw, or what you typically see with a launch. There are the people that will show up and download and try it because they're curious, but not necessarily interested. So that's super hard.
Yeah, and I've had plenty of conversations with developer friends and people that I've met online on Twitter, but they're not in the target market of freelancers. So the feedback is fantastic and it's great to work off of, but it's not anything that I make any hardcore decisions on. So that's pretty much it for remote time. And I'm kind of violating my own advice around focusing on one thing. I do have a side project to my side project, which I'm working on. And it's interesting how that's worked out, because initially I started building this app called App Storefront and targeting micro businesses to have their own dedicated branded app in the App Store with content management system for their products or services that they want to sell. And I initially started building that because I was getting super bored building the cloud storage and authentication and in-app purchases for remote time. And I just needed to build some fun features. So I started building out the user experience of this app. And now, ironically enough, that's twisted around because I'm getting so much energy of building these new features in remote time. And what I'm doing with App Storefront at the moment is building in cloud storage, which is interfacing with Airtable. And that's super boring. So that's only like maybe an hour or two on the weekend, but that's progressing okay. And I'm not sure where that's going to go.
What is App Storefront again? I didn't quite completely follow.
Yeah, so I can make it really practical. My wife sells nuts and dried fruit and stuff as a business on the side, and it's very like it's in email, it's in WhatsApp, it's the whole order process thing is a mess. And she also has a friend who does something similar, but with homemade goods like pillows and costumes and underwear and things. She makes those things from home. So the idea is just basically building a one code base that is a mobile app that allows a micro business to have their own content management system. So they add their products and the pricing and the contact details and everything on the app. And then that gets deployed to the App Store and their customers can use the app to order from them. And they can send out invoices and everything through the app. And it's a white labeled thing. So every time I get a new customer that wants that app, all that I need to do is change the branding and then give them the mechanism to maintain their own CRM so they can add their own products with pictures and all the and pricing and all the rest. They can do that themselves. And then they can have an App Store presence. I'm not sure, the intention is not there for that to be a business one day. That's just, I'm helping out some people and having some fun.
So this isn't one app with a bunch of stores in it, or merchants inside it. It's a separate app per store that you're able to create using your software. So if somebody wants an app in the App Store that lists their products for sale, they can use your app.
Yeah. They can commission me to white label it and deploy it for them. Yes.
Okay, and so is that you're treating that as a side project where you kind of chip away at it when you feel the motivation to? How's that working?
Yeah, so that's fun stuff to do that is not related to remote time and is not related to my day job, and it's helping someone very practically. Like I haven't gotten any traction on remote time, and the day job is to pay the bills, and I get a lot of satisfaction of building the product there, but. I guess it's the software developer in me. I see people with needs that are very clearly I can solve, and it's fun for me just an hour or two on the weekend. So if something pops out on the other end, then that's great.
Well, I'm not trying to make it worse by distracting me even further, but I can't tell you the number of podcasts I've heard where somebody's side project turned into their main project, so you never know. It could grow legs. You never know.
Yeah, I'm super stoked that I got the domain name for that. I mean, appstorefront.com. I was like complete disbelief that I actually managed to get that domain name, but maybe that turns into something. It's fairly closely related to my initial product I was building before remote time, which is like one app for a bunch of merchants to list their services. So I may swing back to that and use that domain sometime in the future. But yeah, the main thing is remote time at the moment.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the last 2 weeks, Brian. You've had some fun stuff happen over the last 2 weeks. Why don't you give us an eye into that window?
Boy, speaking of side projects, so You know, if you go back and listen to episode one, you hear about me talking about building basically an invoicing app for freelancers. That's how we met. It's a common interest. Yeah. And then I had this side project where I wanted to build a really simple, minimalist design blog for myself. So I did that as a, quote, side project, launched that. And then last time we met, we talked about finding what the main thing is that I want to build, because I guess what it boils down to is I feel like for me, the freelancer invoicing market feels a little bit saturated. And that's just for me. I think other people could definitely make it work. But it's almost for what I wanted to build, a race to the bottom. It's like, who can build it and charge the least amount for it? And that's not really what I want to do. On the one hand, it might be okay. It might be good to have a lot of clients paying a little bit, because you kind of diversify. And if you lose a few clients here and there, no big deal. On the other hand, what I hear the most lately is that those are also the most demanding customers. For some reason, there's this inverse relationship with their, where the more they pay, the less they bug you or need from you. And the less they pay, the more they demand from you. So I'm kind of thinking, man, I don't know if that's what I want to do. So last week, I was kind of puttering around with stuff, and I wouldn't say I'm addicted to Twitter, but kind of on Twitter a lot. And I realized on the days where I'm really busy, I get this like FOMO, this fear of missing out on Twitter. And then I end up at 11 o'clock at night, scrolling through Twitter, reading everything. And I feel like I can't go to bed until I've read everything. So I thought, you know, this is kind of silly. I'm going to build something. I'll bet I could build something really easy to scratch my own itch, you know, typical developer thing. So the next day, I played around with the Twitter API, and I went, man, I could actually do this. I think the tweets that I'm most interested in are the ones that get liked the most and retweeted the most and interacted with the most, engaged with, in other words. So what if I looked at my own timeline via the Twitter API and then sorted based on the number of interactions a tweet has divided by the number of followers that person has, so that you don't get the noisy, really popular people always at the top, and played around with the weights of how to make that kind of algorithm work, came up with something that I thought I liked. And by like the end of that day, I had a proof of concept working. No UI, ugly kind of newsletter, or just an email being generated. And then, so I thought, well, this was kind of fun. Let me see if I can generalize this, make it multi-tenant. So then I spent the next few days doing that. And by the end of the week, I had something that I could launch and let people use. No revenue model. Like, I had no idea where it was going to go, how I was going to market this thing, if I was even going to market it at all, what I was going to charge for it, if anything at all. And so I launched it and I threw it out there on Twitter. And a bunch of people signed up, to the point where, you know, on Heroku, you get, I think it's like their free tier is like, I don't know, 100,000 records or something for free in your database. And then the first paid tier, which is only $9 a month, but it's 10 million records. So I had to upgrade really quick. And because I'm pulling down everyone's timeline from every user that I have. Yeah, basically. And then I'm doing a bunch of calculations, and then I'm creating all these lists for people of like their top retweets and their top this and their top that and the most interesting, and also the top X number of tweets that have zero engagement. So people that you follow that nobody's responded to. So maybe you should jump in there and say something. Engage with people, you know, build your audience that way. So this thing started growing really fast, and it was just fun. It was a lot of fun to get people actually using it, even though there's probably a way to monetize it. I don't know. I wasn't thinking about that. I was just having fun with people using the app. And you can kind of tell by how often I tweeted those first few days, just constantly like, this is, you know, it's so cool. Try this out. I got some really great feedback on that, and made a bunch of tweaks as I went. And that lasted about the first week from the past 2 weeks. But basically, I took all the feedback that I got that was really exciting to get, even though I knew this thing was probably not going very far, and just tried to learn from that. You know, how are people using it? How could I build this thing and make it more scalable, more stable? Because I'm adding hundreds of thousands of records per day at this point.
Yes.
So I've got, and I have a record limit of 10 million. So how can I let this thing go on autopilot? And that's kind of where I'm at now. So I landed at the, at least for me, the decision that I'm just going to leave this as a side project, something that was fun that I built in a week, getting a little better at building and launching. You know, the first one was 3 weeks. This one was 1 week. I don't think I could go much shorter than that, but it was fun. And now I'm looking at what's next. The other thing that I did this last week that took the kind of the rest of my time was I went to MicroConf in Portland, which was a ton of fun. And you know, it was MicroConf local, to be fair, not full blown MicroConf. So MicroConf mini, basically. It was 6 hours, including lunch. And there were four speakers, and it was awesome. It was worth every penny. You know, I paid to fly up there to Portland. I stayed in a hotel because I wanted to have that evening free to, you know, grab dinner with someone or something like that and not rush back to the airport. And it was awesome. It was worth every penny. And it wasn't recorded, unfortunately, so it's not something that I can send a link out for. And it's probably a topic for a whole nother episode of the things that I got out of it, but it was really good because everything that they talked about was super actionable, which takes me to another point of the, or part of the, MicroConf experience, which was they had us, at the tables that we were sitting at, talk about one of three things. And they gave us a list of three things. And I thought at the beginning, I was like, oh, I hate group work. It's like flashback to college and university. This feels so forced. And but Rob, he acknowledged that. He's like, just give it a chance. And by the end of the time where he was like, okay, we were out of time, I was like, no, because it was so good. And I didn't have anything to contribute of my own because I'm like basically in between projects right now. So I was just trying to help other people out, but it was just so good. And the whole hallway track that he talks about, this sounds like a MicroConf advertisement, but it's the same for any conference that you go to, like just talk to people. We're all so supportive of each other. And you know, I think people just want to help each other. And that was really the fun part. It was really nice to be back in person at a conference like this. And, it was masks on 100% of the time, social distancing and all that. But, as an introvert and somebody that loves working from home, I never thought I'd miss that. Turns out I totally do, in small doses, not all the time, but, but it was really nice. And the really nice thing for me while I was there is what I came away with that wasn't actually said. It was like what I was thinking about in the back of my head. The thing that I've decided on for sure is that I need to be thinking more along the B2B lines. I think all of my ideas so far, all of them have been either B2C or at best prosumer, which is like, you know, professional customers, basically, the freelancers and the podcasters and people like that. Nothing wrong with serving those communities. But for me, I don't think it's the right answer. So I've decided B2B is where I need to get to, and that's going to take some exercise, some like mental exercises to get there, because all of my ideas they all tend to be B2C, as evidenced by the two that I launched here recently, the blog and Twitter. And so what I did is when I got back to the hotel, I had a whole bunch of ideas that I'd already had, some that I came up with in the conference, and I built out a matrix. So 25 columns it ended up being, and each column was a different criteria. So for example, how B2B is it? How much could I charge for it? Is this interesting to me? Would it be fun to build? Would it be fun to maintain? 25 different things. Happy to share that if it's helpful for anyone. And then for each row was a different idea. And then for each of those criteria, I gave it a score 1 to 3. I kept the numbers low so that I didn't like worry too much about, is it a 9 or a 10? It's more like, is it a 0, a 1, 2, or 3? 3 being, this is really good. And I just scored them. And it actually, some of the ideas that I previously thought were really good ended up being scoring really low on my new criteria coming out of MicroConf. And that made it so much easier to just throw those away. And the ones that surfaced to the top, I ended up with, I actually ended up with one with a, that was had a really high score, but it wouldn't be fun to build, and it wasn't really that interesting. And so even though, yeah, it's probably a good opportunity, I don't think I'm going to pursue that one, and that's okay. But I had two runners up, and so then now I've got some ideas to pursue. I won't talk about them yet today because I'm kind of tired of just talking and not showing or doing. So I don't want to say I'm going to build this thing and then show up 2 weeks from now or whatever for.
So Brian, you're going to build it in a week, right?
No. Well, that has changed my whole outlook. I've always known, we all know that building, launching, and iterating faster is better. But I kind of proved to myself that I could with these two exercises. And so, I am on. I mean, honestly, thinking about how I could do that. How can I get it to the minimum set of requirements that would allow me to at least get feedback in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. And so that was actually one of the criteria as well that I was looking at, was how quick could I get to an MVP or a proof of concept at least. And then the last thing I'll say is, while I was at that conference, the whole time I'm thinking in the back of my head, I have this friend that we tried to build something 15 years ago together. He's a sales marketing guy. I'm the dev. We had a couple other friends that we went in on a previous project that just didn't go anywhere. We've kept in touch over the years, and he's built some successful offline businesses, not a tech guy. But he's built this other business that has worked out. He's proven the business model, and he's kind of got it working with a combination of spreadsheets and Zapier. I don't know the correct way to say that, but basically
potato, potato.
Yeah. duct tape and bubble gum, and he's got it working. And I reached out to him, and we did lunch yesterday and talked about it a little bit. So I'm giving him some ideas on ways that he can improve that, but it might also be something that I can team up with him on. So I'm exploring that area as well. And this all came out of MicroConf. I'm not sure I would have really thought about that previous experience and how he's doing, for example, if I hadn't put myself out there, gone to this conference that was a little bit uncomfortable, you know, being out in public with this pandemic going on and, you know, behind face masks and all that, but it ended up being really, really good. If you can't tell, it got me really excited. So that's where I am. But that also kind of that meeting that I just talked about and a, you know, potential partnership there versus staying solo got me thinking a little bit about, you know, continuing to go solo versus going with a co-founder. You know, you're obviously going solo. I don't know if that's by design. We haven't really talked about that, or if it's just been you haven't found the right person. You know, I kind of have my thoughts on that. But what are your thoughts on going solo or staying solo versus eventually finding a co-founder versus finding a co-founder from the beginning? Like, what do you see?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think I was a lot more, it's either A or B in the beginning. And I get a lot of energy and motivation of working in small groups and one-on-one. So I think when I started out with remote time, I think the intention was to try and find a co-founder. But I had listened to enough podcasts and from experienced founders to know that that is a bit of a minefield. And there were one or two kind of, I guess, exploratory interviews with potential people. But thankfully, I think the sanity prevailed. And I kind of realized that it's very much like a marriage. It's a stereotype to name that. But I mean, that's pretty much what it is. You can't force something like that. It's very much a relational thing. You're committing to a long-term relationship with a lot of trust. You're basically putting each other's lives in each other's hands, and you don't do that with some stranger that you found on the internet. So that really ties back into what you were saying with getting out there. And that's the challenge, I guess, for solo founders and indie dads who don't have a lot of time. You know, you can't go to conferences every 5 minutes. You can't spend a lot of time in communities because you actually got to build something. So that's very, very difficult. So I was content to be patient and build remote time on my own steam. And I guess the philosophy is that if I run into someone who's also passionate about the same things as I am and we have complementary skill sets and we hit it off, then that's I'm open to that. But it's not something that I'm proactively pursuing, because I've seen where you're trying to force that kind of thing and it just ends up in tears and creates stress. And that's the opposite of why I'm doing this. I'm doing this to have fun and to build something and exercise my creative juices. And doing that with the right person is double the fun, but doing it with the wrong person is just, you know, that's not good at all. How about you, Ron? How do you think about that kind of thing?
Totally makes sense. I've been, to use your analogy, married and divorced a few times now. It's been,
yeah.
I've been burned a few times. I think that the first time, well, without naming names, the way that I met the guy that I just had lunch with that I was talking about was I responded to a Craigslist ad back in the day. They were just looking for like a tech guy that knew something they wanted to bounce ideas off of. And there were a group of four of us, and we got together and we came up with an idea, sat around a whiteboard, jotted out all the ideas we had, came up with one, and I built it and we launched it and nothing happened. And I spent a lot of time building it and nothing happened. And partly it was the idea. Partly I think it was definitely execution. A lot of it was, both with that and the other projects that I've had partners with, it just seems like, not trying to pat myself on the back or anything, but no, other people aren't as passionate about the ideas that I'm passionate about, and I'm sure vice versa. And so when you're super passionate about something and you're going gung ho every extra hour you have working on this thing, and the other person's just kind of like, meh, it's really demotivating.
Yeah.
You know, so it's as far as complementary skill sets go, I don't necessarily need another developer. What I need is somebody that's a sales or marketing person. You know, the thing that I find hard, and I'm not in those circles, and so it's hard to find those people to begin with. You know, and to find somebody that's passionate about startups and that's passionate about your startup idea in that circle that I'm not in feels like a little bit of a unicorn type situation. So you can't just rush out there and pair up with the first person you find that kind of shares the same passion. I'm not trying to discourage. I'm not trying to say that solo founders are better by any means, but it's hard and you have to be careful, because it can also take a great idea and drive it into the ground, you know, if you've got a bad relationship. So, I'm with you. I think that there's nothing wrong with either, but if you've got a good partner to work with, it, like, boy, you should value that, because it can both be, you know, it can help with the motivation, with the keeping each other accountable.
Yeah,
for bouncing sure. ideas off of each other, because no one person has all the good ideas, you know. But that's hard to do, and as a single founder. And as an indie parent, I think that makes it doubly hard, because that person's schedule is not going to be the same as yours. And so you've got your family, your work schedule, the extra time that you have to actually work on your side project, and their schedule. And exactly. Getting all four of those to jive is really hard.
Not impossible though, right?
Not impossible, no. And in fact, maybe if you find the right person, you can move twice as fast, because they can work. I mean, to kind of speak out of both sides of my mouth here, they can work when you're offline. So I think it's something worth trying to find. And as far as like equity goes, I mean, that to me is a non-starter, because 50% of something is a whole lot better than 0% or 100% of nothing. You know, so that should never be a factor. It's really, do your passions line up? And can you work together? Do you offer complementary skills or the same skill that you can go twice as fast on because you're working together?
Yeah, I think what you're saying there is very important. I mean, the stereotype is, do you want the trifecta of marketing, sales, and building? But I think Zapier was one of them. It's just like two developers who basically just built something that was just so practical and they made a success out of it. And you can hire in those skills that you're missing as you, your product gets scalability. The other thing that I just want to mention quickly is, I think for me, the immediate thought of starting something was, do I get a co-founder or not? And I think there is a middle ground. I think there is a place where you can get a lot of co-founder qualities without actually somebody buying into your business. So the way that I've done that up until now is find some accountability partners that I have regular meetings with. It's other indie hackers that share a passion for building products, but have experience in different spheres, whether it be user experience design or whether it be server architectures or whatever it is. And just having the discipline of meeting and giving feedback, it's not just a one-way street. It's you should find an accountability partner where you have as much to give them as what they have to give you. And that's been quite motivational, because you look forward to that meeting and you're accountable to give progress updates. You know, this meeting with you, Brian, and doing this podcast is doing a very similar thing. So if you have two or three of those relationships in your life as a solo founder, and those are a lot easier to find than a girlfriend's a lot easier to find than a wife, right? So go try a couple of those out first and see whether that doesn't satisfy your need for creativity and collaboration and accountability. And the more you do that, and just to swing back to my initial point at the start of the episode of I wish I had gotten embedded in the communities earlier on, because the more you do that, the more you increase your field of view. We've got a very famous South African golfer, Gary Player, and one of his best quotes are, "The more I practice, the luckier I get." So the more you expose yourself and talk to people, and not just customers, you're talking to people in the same field and people who are in the same entrepreneurial space, the more you're going to expose yourself to meeting the right co-founder and finding other people that are as passionate as you about doing the thing that you're doing.
Yeah, totally agree. And it's not hard to find somebody to bounce ideas off of that turns into an accountability partner. I mean, there's masterminds out there, but you don't even have to go that far. You can just DM someone on Twitter and say, "Hey, I noticed you're doing this. I'm doing something similar. Want to bounce ideas off of each other?" As long as your motives are pure, it's pretty easy to find someone to do that with. So.
And it really is that simple. It's my first accountability partner. I didn't know him from a bar of soap. He's on the other side of the world living in Denmark. And he was an acquaintance of an acquaintance on Twitter. And I saw he had done something, some similar projects to me. He built a golf app and I had built a golf app, and he looked like he was very into the indie hacking. And I just DM'd him and I said, "Hey, you know, looks like you're doing some interesting things. Do you want to... You got time for a 20-minute call? I'm interested to see what you're doing." And we had that conversation. We hit it off and said, "Well, do you want to do this again in 2 weeks?" And it was like, "Yeah, sure, let's do that." And then it was like, "Okay, well, let's do this every 2 weeks. This is fun." And now I can call him a friend, and we get online and we get excited about each other's projects and hold each other accountable. And he tells me my design is crap and I need to change the button and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really is that easy. Just ask, really.
And all you introverts out there are shrinking back in your seats and going, "I don't want to," but it's really just that the hardest part is just that first reach out and that first call. And then after you get on the first call, I promise it gets a whole lot easier. So just force yourself to do it and you'll love it. Well, that probably wraps us up for today, with the exception of the best part of the Indie Dads podcast, which is the dad jokes.
Well, that's what everybody tunes in for, let's be honest.
Oh, totally.
We keep them on the line just to tune into it. That's why we put it in the last part of the episode.
This is where they hit the next button on the podcast player. That's okay. But for those of you that stick around, we appreciate you, because we prepared some dad jokes.
I can get us started, Brian. So I know, Brian, you're an American, right? So you're an American when you go into the bathroom, and you're an American when you come out of the bathroom. But what are you when you're in the bathroom?
Oh, I'm kind of afraid of this one. Sounds like a potty joke. I don't know.
European.
Oh. Okay, that one I'm going to have to pass on to my kids. That's pretty good. Well, my dad joke is three generations old. And some of these are probably pretty old, no matter what. But this is a joke that my grandpa used to tell my dad, and of course he told me too. It is a pretty simple one. Why do elephants paint their toenails red? Any idea?
I have no idea.
So they can hide in the strawberry patch. Have you ever seen an elephant in a strawberry patch?
No.
Must work pretty well. He was always pretty proud of that one. I think I heard it about 100 times. All right. Well, that wraps it for today. We didn't talk about what we're doing for the next 2 weeks, but maybe we can surprise people. I know I won't be doing a whole lot. So we'll come back and we'll have the Malcolm show next time.
Hopefully that means it's going to be a shorter episode, right? We keep aiming for half an hour and we go to an hour, but
yeah, well,
let's
we'll
see how we go. Until right. Next time, everyone.
We'll see you.
Thanks for tuning in.
If you've enjoyed this episode and want an easy way to support us, we'd love it if you reviewed this podcast on whichever platform you're using to tune in. If you'd like to ask a question, you can send an email to hello@indiedads.com or message us directly on Twitter. You can also find us at indiedads.com, where you can see show notes, links to our Twitter profiles, and product websites. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.